Is that it?
Yes.
That's on.
So Linda, good morning, and we're going to call the Lane County Board of Commissioners work session to order. And this morning it is cold. And it's Wednesday, December 4th, 2013. We have one item on the agenda, and that's a work session on homelessness in Lane County. And then Steve, can you start this?
Yes.
I'll just go ahead and start. This is a follow-up to a meeting that when Steve presented about 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, that you wanted to extend that conversation. I know that this has been on your agenda. I know that as of yesterday, Commissioner Farr was asking questions about this very issue and the cold weather. So this is an opportunity to hear more about what's going on here in Lane County and what we're doing in Health and Human Services, and as well just have a conversation around this very important issue. So I'm going to turn it over to Steve, who will get us started.
Good morning, Board. Good morning, Chair Likand. So this morning we're going to be talking about homelessness, and I think it's, this time of year it's always very germane. We all were joking about walking in the cold here, but to imagine being out in the cold in this kind of weather is sort of, it's sort of a gut check to think about what it's like for folks without homes. What I'm going to do this morning is I'm going to spend 5 to 10 minutes just sort of giving a broad brush. Cory Wolf, who supervises our housing and human service efforts, is here as well, and so we'll be able to answer any questions. And as I understand it, this morning it's an opportunity for us to lay out briefly some additional information, since you all heard the presentation that we gave, and to answer any kinds of questions that you have, and maybe see if where we're headed is sort of the same thing you're interested in, and to find out what areas you're interested in staff looking at a little bit more. So with that, I'm going to hand out some information to you, and I want to start off by saying that in presenting information this morning, I'm really keying off of some of the other policy initiatives of the Department of Health and Human Services, and of the discussion that the board has had with the department around a couple of things. And one of those, to begin with, is adverse child experiences. And homelessness for children really goes under that broad, category of things that we're working on in the department. Everything from child abuse and neglect, parents having kids removed because their parents are unable to provide a home for them, to children who are in families that have experienced domestic violence and those sorts of issues. Another area that we wanted to touch on too, that we're doing work on, is homelessness among folks with mental illness. And again, that's something when you all met to talk about the Community Health Improvement Plan, that was an item that was put on the list for the department to follow up on. So child homelessness and homelessness for the mentally ill. And I'm sort of going through this in sort of in a practical way, because when you look at the numbers, and you see on this handout that I gave you that there were about a little less than 1,447 homeless children who we serve through the myriad of nonprofits and faith groups that we work with. It's not a large number, but it's an area where we can make a lot of impact because we can, you know, definitely get upstream. You know, we know that you know, some of the kids who experience the trauma of being homeless, you know, who aren't the fortunate ones to have support systems or families to take them in, can, you know, later on in life have greater issues. And on the back side of the sheet, there's some information from the Department of Education at the state, and they keep track of the number of students in schools around the state that are homeless. And then the other thing that they include in their report that came out on November 21st was they're tracking now academic achievement, and so they're sort of studying the difference in the academic achievement between all students, economically disadvantaged students, and then those students who are homeless. And you can see that homeless students have a harder time. Oftentimes, there's a potential that they could repeat a grade. Now, you know, like everyone else in society, you know, there are different stories, there are different levels of resiliency, and, you know, we're all going to be able to tell a story about somebody maybe we knew in our lives who grew up in poverty, or was homeless for a portion of their life, and, you know, they were able to make it through just fine. But what we know, statistically, what we know is that, you know, that this is a major issue. The other thing I want to mention, and then I'll be finished with this part, is that that the information on the mentally ill who are homeless nationally, they say that about 20-25% of the homeless suffer from mental illness. And surprisingly, when I went to do some research for this presentation today, you know, there isn't an awful lot of new information available out there. But what I can tell you is, in the area of the mentally ill homeless, the department has been involved with a grant application to the state of Oregon that is specifically aimed at helping mentally ill homeless folks, and then folks that are transitioning from various care facilities so that they don't become homeless. So that's the first piece I wanted to go over. So some key points that I want to make sort of in the transition to the next piece is that we sort of have, and I should have written this down, but we sort of have five areas with the intergovernmental with the Human Services Commission where that we're really working on. And those five areas include homeless prevention. What we know is that if we can prevent homelessness, you know, we're ahead of the game. And nationally, there's a big emphasis on homeless prevention. We have a project that we're working on for coordinated entry, and that is that the folks that we're serving through the nonprofits that we work with, so they don't get the runaround, so that the services that we provide are customer friendly. It's a common assessment And then that feeds into a sort of criteria that determine, you know, the next affordable housing or supportive housing slot that's open, who is going to be able to avail themselves to that. Another area that we're doing quite a bit of work is rapid rehousing. And the idea there is that we're trying to keep people from being homeless for long periods of time. And then we want to make sure that we have tailored services. And really, the, one of the pieces, and this really fits into the discussion that we have with the homeless, with the board that we've put together, is that we want to involve other county partners. And I'll pass this around. What I'm passing around is a copy of the tentative structure of the Poverty and Homeless Board that that you all approved the last time that we met. But you know, one of the key things that we want to do with the new Poverty and Homeless Board is that we want to involve the workforce partnership and you know, the Housing Community Services Agency. We want to make sure that we're using all of the resources that are available within the you know, within the county to come forward to work on homelessness with us. So on the Poverty and Homeless Board, what we've done is we have a chart that Pearl put together that sort of shows, based upon the categories of representation, you know, who would be on the board, the types of folk. And then behind that is a form, and it's really what we're asking you to think about today is, you know, who, if you have people in your lives or people you know in the community who would be good candidates for the Poverty and Homeless Board. The timeline on this is that our current board structure will sunset on June 30, and the Poverty and Homeless Board will go into effect in July. And our HUD grant requires that we have this new board operating for the continuum of care by August 1st of 2014.
So, Steve, do you want to just take a second and take a look at who's on the
sure.
committee and see if there's any questions or thoughts about?
Sid, first of all, how much time do we have in this meeting?
We're scheduled for an hour, but I think this is an important enough meeting that depending on everybody's schedule,
okay.
that if we go a little over, first of all, I'm looking at staff.
Yeah.
But, you know, yeah. if members have to leave, then I understand, but I think it's important.
Okay.
So.
I was going to say, with regard to the statistics, I wanted to ask, it said 92 of the families with children included a U.S. military veteran, 7%. A lot of times you're driving around town and people have signs that say homeless veteran or veteran, give money. I'm wondering if that 7% number is accurate. I see it's 92 of the families with children.
Right, so it is
single.
It is, and it is accurate because these statistics are the folks who were fortunate enough to mm-hmm. receive social services mm-hmm. From us during the past year.
Okay. Do you have any way of gauging what the percentage of people that are out there on the streets that are not getting services? In other words, these are the people you're aware of because they're coming in for services. Are there people that are not getting services because they or they're not aware of it, or they've been rejected, or whatever?
Yeah, and
Is that a concern, or is this, does this represent the homeless population?
Well, what we have, the numbers that we have that are on this sheet is from the one-night count in 2013, 1,700, and 1,100 of those folks were without shelter, and those were just the folks that could be counted that one night. And then we know over a period of a year, the folks who used our social service systems, that over 11,000 people reported being homeless, and that's the HUD definition of being homeless. That means that that doesn't include people who are doubled up and living with others. That means that they're homeless.
Okay.
Also, you might want to mention how frequently the HSC talks about this and how many people come and talk about the homelessness. It's not just the one-night count, but what is it? I mean, the one-night count is an accurate number, but these guys are, I mean, it's what they do.
Can I just think of names? Okay. So, during a one-night homeless count, it's only as good as those who are collecting the data. And we did a really big push with the Veteran Affairs people, and they actually did not come up with the numbers that they needed to. I think, I don't know what their staffing issues were. We met with them and we included them. So I think there should have been a higher number on this than there were. In terms of, are there more veterans out there? Yeah, and who is looking at that? I think Whitebird's outreach efforts reach out to those folks. And when you're at the Egan Warming Center working, I'll tell you, there are lots of homeless veterans coming in there. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the few services that the people who are really having a hard time out of the streets and don't generally get services will appear for services there.
Well, I guess what I'm asking is the number of 92 homeless veterans...
No, it's not
an accurate number.
It's not
undercounted.
It's a way
undercounted.
Yeah. We had a huge conversation with the few people before the count, and that's the numbers that we got from all of
the
county.
92 of the families.
Right.
Of the families with children.
Who you served during the year.
Who you served.
It's not a total population.
So do you feel like the overall number is an estimate of the true homeless population?
Yes.
Yeah. Even though that one is low.
Yes.
Okay. And then in terms of the list of the Poverty and Homelessness Board, what's the timeline to appoint those people, and who does the appointee?
The timeline is that we hope to have this board approved by sometime in the spring. The Human Services Commission had a discussion at our last meeting, and they would like to, a subset of the Human Services Commission would like to be involved to help as a nominating committee, since we're putting together a new board, because once we get the board set, we'll probably have a nominating committee that will be a part of the board that will look at applicants in the future. And so we don't have a calendar. We will have a set calendar for that, but generally we know that we want to bring a slate of folks for your approval sometime in the spring, so that we can appoint them and so we can be operational for the first time.
Are you advertising for low-income education, low-income faith-based, homeless or formerly homeless? Are you advertising for that? What's the timeline for that?
Well, we're advertising for all of the seats, and then if you look...
When are you advertising?
We will begin advertising probably after the first of the year.
We've begun presenting to groups like the Human Services Network, and we presented to the HSC board, and we're talking with you about it, and we're trying to go to public groups to let them know.
Okay.
And then there'll be a posting for applicants through the county, mm-hmm. and then those applications will go before the nominating committee of the Human Services Commission board, and as Steve said, then they'll make a recommendation to you as a slate. Now, one of the things that we're hoping you'll think about is, who would you want to be the Lane County a seat on this.
Which of these are appointed by Lane County, which are appointed by other people?
You will be appointing all of them.
All of them?
Yes.
You're the approving body.
Okay, and will the city of Eugene or the city of Springfield be nominating their elected officials?
Yes.
We have put out invitations to electeds there to talk with them about recommendations that they might have for this board.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. And by the way, I just want to add again, I think that the name Poverty and Homelessness Board is a better name than a lot of other names you could have picked. And I think that it emphasizes that we're really talking about poverty here. And this is just one exponent of poverty, homelessness, but poverty is really, you know, we need another war on poverty.
So in light of, we're just getting in the cold season, we have the warming centers starting up. Do you have any idea at this point how many people are using? You can't even keep track of the count at this point.
We do, I'm trying, you know, I was at the first couple, we collected through Service Point, our database. And I think on the first couple of nights, there were about 300 people using the services. And now they've just, you know, they reopened again last night, and I think they're going to try to be open for 5 nights, it looks like. So we get, what they do is they collect it by paper and then they input it, so we don't know until they're done inputting it. But it was about 300 the first couple of nights.
I heard 327.
So is that just in the metro area, Eugene? Or some of the outlying areas like Cottage Grove in the past, they've had a warming center?
The Egan Park is in the metro area. And then I know that Cottage Grove has done their own version of that. And I know that they're willing to transport people into town if needed. So they have like sort of a shuttle that picks people up.
I thought Vanita had a Egan Center.
And also.
If you don't mind, and you get updated numbers, I know we're going through a period of time when it's going to be much colder than it's been. In several years, could you give me just an update on numbers?
And how many they had?
When they come back to you.
I can tell you last year if you want.
So what we'll do is, if it's okay with the board, we'll just have Steve Pearl send an email with the date nights count so you can see. Is that what you're interested in?
Yeah, I'm just interested in that.
Include Vanita and include Cottage Grove and other places if you have.
Yeah, I don't know if they're opening a shelter in Florence or not.
Another question would be is, you know, with the city's new rest stops, you know, from places where folks can stay, are those people taking advantage of the warming centers? Are they getting it out in their tents? Would be information. I don't know if that's any way to acquire.
Okay.
Sure, I'm in touch with the person who's coordinating. I can find out.
Okay. Did you have more?
Did you want to do that last?
Well,
the time is really yours, so
yeah. Well, because we want to talk a little bit about the. Excuse me.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, a little bit about your the board makeup.
Sure. That would be great.
Just a couple things that jump out for me that might be helpful for this board is one, to make sure we include somebody from an agency like Looking Glass that deals with youth and youth in crisis, because that's, there seems to be this big gap between 12 to 18 year olds. You know, there's lots of agencies for under, you know, the younger kids, it seems like, to get them into foster or whatever, but that you know, I had a next door neighbor that was kind of in crisis at age 15, and if it weren't for Station 7, but he did spend a lot of time out on the street. And that's, so you know, somebody that can give that input about homeless youth would be great. Then maybe as an ex officio member, somebody from an electric utility. One of the very first indicators of homelessness is an inability to pay the electric bill. And I know that there's a lot, you know, EWEB, when I was there, we had a lot of communication with some of the agencies when we did get somebody that was getting behind and getting ready to cut off notice. We can connect, you know, those cut off notice people with an agency before they end up homeless, you know, because that's
they're not paying their electric bill. There's other things wrong in that household. Mm-hmm. Where we can get them hooked up to St. Vincent Paul early. So we don't have these people where, you know, we're counting people in our statistics that actually got services. The better thing would be to try and start connecting them to service when they're at risk in that way. So I think we could get somebody from an electric utility as an ex officio to talk about making that linkage and keeping that communication.
Any other ideas on the board?
And certainly our hope is that you will help spread the word to get good people to apply, and we're happy on the staff side to do the outreach. If you just give us names, we'll make sure people get applications.
Okay. One of the things that it seems like it's a broader, you know, the topic of this meeting, homelessness, is a bit of a narrower topic than the poverty and homelessness board. I'm wondering, in a poverty half of that title, have you given any thought to organizations that are formed for the specific purpose of dealing with poverty issues? Legal aid comes to mind as an example. Maybe advocacy organizations that exist to advocate for the homeless. You know, I mean, you have people on there from healthcare and faith-based, but those organizations may not have the purpose. Their purpose may not be to address poverty issues. So, you know, legal aid would be an example, or some kind of a homeless coalition or groups that advocate for the homeless or poverty issues. I agree with Jay's suggestion about electric utilities. In the past, we've gotten money from EWEB. I don't know.
We continue to get over $1.8 million.
Yeah. So I mean, they obviously have a stake in it, but to broaden it to a broader than Eugene and Springfield would be to include other utilities from other communities, because if it's accurate, which I think it is, that if people get behind on their electric bill, that's an indicator of, you know, stress, then I'm sure that same statistic is out there with EPUD and SUB and the others. And that's another concern, is are we going to involve some of the other communities outside of Eugene and Springfield in this? What's your opinion of broadening that? Because we've got commissioners here from Vinita and Cottage Grove, and they're given rural Lane County, they're given Lane County, but overall it has a certain Eugene Springfield flavor to it, which is okay with me, but I want a bigger buy-in from the board, and getting more of their constituents engaged may help us.
Right. I think that's good. I think there are two different opportunities and for involvement. And one is going to be on the board itself. It's a 12-member board, excluding the ex officio members. And there are going to be a number of subcommittees, and then those subcommittees can also have working groups that work on specific tasks. So what we looked at was some people have put together these models where they have a board with 35 people, and what we chose to do was a working board with 12 members, but then to not forget that the intent of this is to involve as many people as possible in the effort through subcommittees and other work groups. So.
Maybe you could point out to me, I'm kind of thinking we're missing maybe some minority representation, where you might expect that to be represented.
Okay.
I'll see, like Hispanic or anything that's really called out as a specific area. And a lot of times I find that they just have a different network system than they need to get plugged in
right
into our system.
That's excellent, yeah.
Because I see that you have business community members in I'm going to highly suggest that we really work hard to bring someone in besides the Chamber of Commerce Executive Director. I think it would be very helpful to bring somebody in who actually runs a business.
Okay.
And who could provide that insight. I think we rely too much on the chamber execs, and the reality is they don't run a company. They run a nonprofit, and that's great,
right.
But I think you need to have somebody boots on the ground who's running the business and get them more engaged, because if you get a leader in the business community more engaged, you have the opportunity to then have that mouthpiece to reach out to even more businesses that can become more engaged. I think that's a piece of this that's missing. And I think that each of those members of the board can even help with that.
Good.
That you go beyond the typical, whether it's Dave or Dan Egan or someone like that. And it's no disrespect to them at all. But I think the problem is, when you say business community, you reach out to a Chamber of Commerce person when it should be an person who actually runs a company. So that's a suggestion I have, and I think that would be very, very helpful. And again, it's about engaging those in the business community, actually being a part of this and understanding what's at stake. Because this is their future, too. And so I think that's going to be an important piece here.
I would agree with my experience on the Workforce Partnership Board. Right now we have Bob Halligan, who's, I don't think he's the chief operating officer for Willamette Valley Company, but he's right up there, and he's able to, in our effort to try to get companies to buy into the services, become, you know, have certain certifications and do different things. He's an incredible champion for that organization.
Right.
So if we could find that in here, that person, like I said, can probably carry more weight in the business community than just a Chamber of Commerce.
Okay. You can look at the Shelter Care Board of Directors too. There are a number of business people there who are really engaged.
Good for Lane County.
We think.
Some other
Looking Glass.
Some others. Yeah. Looking Glass, I mean, you have several there, so.
Yeah. Robin.
I commented about the need for the advocacy groups. What advocacy groups are there in the poverty area that you normally intersect with? What are besides the government that's supposed to do something about all this, what advocacy groups are out there?
Well, my most recent example that I can give is I reached out to Michael at CALC, in getting the faith community and the network of folks who work with CALC involved in an effort to make homelessness more visible to state legislators. So that would be a more recent example.
You've gone a lot deeper than that too, Steve. If you look at the Human Services Network.
The Human Services, if you look at advocacy, grassroots advocacy, and then the advocacy from the nonprofit community, as Pat mentioned earlier, people in our office are working on these issues on a daily basis, so, we have staff that are connecting with different groups.
Last night I was at the NAMI event out at Lane Community College, and you look at NAMI, and many of the people who are involved in NAMI, for instance, the specific mental illnesses are, and you reach out to those on the HS network.
The Human Services Network, yeah.
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 Continually. You guys are probably talking them daily.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, when you look at the way we're structured, we're intergovernmental. The majority of our services are operated by community nonprofits. Many of those community nonprofits end up with networks of volunteers, and so if you were to look at it, the tentacles go out pretty deep.
I think that the boards that are around the country were required to do this, who apply for that consumer care grant that we do, where we bring in to $1.7 million annually. But what they try to do is to get a cross-section of a lot of those suggestions that you're making, because you're trying to change systems around homelessness, not just sort of talk about it and analyze it, but to really actually do some change in the community. And I think that when you get advocacy groups together, you get people who are homeless or formerly homeless on the board, you know, all the different, like we looked at, the Department of Human Services would be really important to have representation from there, because how do you work together, or eWeb, or one of the utilities, how do you work together to change your systems, to make it more accessible for people that are homeless, and to prevent and end it. And so that's what we're looking for with this. Your suggestions, I think, are really helpful.
Good, thanks. So I'm gonna cover two more points, and one of the pieces that I'm handing out, and I'm just gonna go through the top sheet on this, is I wanted to make sure that you all are aware of the changes at the Eugene Mission.
Steve, just a step back, you mentioned five areas that you're working on. You said prevention,
coordinated entry, rapid rehousing, tailored programs, and economic opportunities. And then I started with talking about homeless children, families, and homeless mentally ill. And
Steve, before you go into that, this is something Pearl and I talked about this a few months ago. But so economic opportunities, because I asked the question. I said, how many folks, and how to count, I guess, is the question I have, because we talked about there are some people that are homeless, that have some mental health issues, and really are going to rely on the services we provide to get them through. But yet, are there other folks out there that basically are one paycheck away, and unfortunately they miss three? So do you have a count out there right now of those who, the separation, I guess, I'm trying to be as sensitive as possible here, but I think, you know, there are some people out there that really want to gain employment, and the employment right now maybe is creeping up a little bit, but for the most part still stinks.
Yeah, I guess the issue, you know, the two biggest issues around homelessness are the availability of affordable housing and then poverty. And the in this overview document that we put together, we do know that majority of families who become homeless are situationally homeless, but there are a number of families that struggle with other issues. One of the things that's important to think about is, you know, we have like 21% of the population, the households in the county, live in poverty, and then of the households in poverty, 65% have folks that are employed, and then 50% of the people who are employed are working in jobs that are less than half time. But less than full-time. I misspoke. So that's part of the deal, is that among the homeless, among the poor people, there are more and more people who are working. Now, we also know that, you know, particularly among some of the families that we're working with, and some of the other homeless singles that we're working with, linking people up to employment and economic opportunity is the way to get them back on the path to some sort of stability. And in preparation for today, we can't separate out those numbers, but what I like to think about is, like, when I'm thinking about homeless families with children, and I look at the list here, and I say, well, you know, if we set a goal and we said, well, in 6 months from now, we'd like to see that you know, that maybe we come up with an effort, but there are 100 families, you know, beginning next school year that don't have to, their kids don't have to experience homelessness. It's the kind of thing where it's more practical to sort of, you can get, do the analytics and get the numbers, and then you have to look at, well, what is, you know, where can we make a difference, and what is it achievable? You know, it's a old thing, you know, to help one person or to save one life is a blessing. But then we look at the resources that we have here as a county and see what we can do to help more.
Well, and I want to make sure you get back on your topic, but I only bring that up because I you know, I watch the job numbers every month, and to me it's stunning to me when they talk about new jobs being created, but the percentage of them, the new jobs being created are part-time.
Right.
I mean, it's unbelievable to me that nationally, not just in Oregon, but nationally, the new jobs being created, the vast majority are part-time jobs. So you see unemployment in Douglas County at 22%, and in Lane County it's about 14. So that's why I bring that up, and I just so that's why I was asking that question. And so it's something maybe we can maybe try to work on, and I know those are probably very difficult numbers to get, but a good guesstimate be kind of worthwhile, I think.
And I think, Chair Lycan, that is a critical piece, because when, you know, I think about Commissioner Brozovich talking about prevention and how really our resources are best spent if we can keep people from falling into homelessness, and I think you're absolutely right that those are the families and individuals who are a huge risk. So I'm sorry.
No, you said pretty much. Underscoring that is the fact that the kinds of stress that being on the edge of eviction places a family in. You look at kids who are trying to go to school in that environment and trying to put food on the table in that environment. But it's really difficult to get those numbers, but it all boils back to underemployment and not being able to. You know, so more than 30% of your paycheck goes to housing. It leaves very little for the other things that you need. So, and Jay, your point regarding the last thing that the first thing that people pay is the utilities. So if they're not paying the utilities, you know they're not paying all of these other things, and we're right on the bloody edge.
I was wondering if you or Felicia or Steve or anyone from staff could give us any recommendations on things the board could do now, not that now isn't planning for appointing or getting this announcement out and appointing this board, that isn't to criticize that as not now, because that is something you're working on, but I feel a certain urgency, both because of these alarming numbers and because of the really horrible weather we're having and the number of people that may die, you know, now, as opposed to, you know, getting this board together. I'm wondering if there's something that the board could do with whatever powers we have, whatever money we have, whatever real property we have. Is there something more imminent, more now, that we could do to address the seriousness of this problem right now? What could we do? What are things we could do that we have not done, or that we could do more of that we have done?
I'm going to be a little bit cautious in answering that, but what I would tell you is that there is you know, there's always an opportunity to get involved in looking at ways that you know, we can more rapidly get homeless people, you know, back into housing. So that's, you know, one opportunity. You know, families with children. Secondly, you know, we have some opportunities immediately to do some work with getting some more mentally ill people sheltered. You know, the third
the third thing that I would say, and the staff has been involved with this right now, is that we're working with the statewide network to get some additional grant resources, because we know that the Egan Warming Center is going to be really pushed this year, and the folks that are working with it. So I've been involved in the last couple of weeks with a group who is working with a private donor who is looking at making a statewide donation of around $250,000 to some of these efforts. So there are a lot of things that can be done. My caution is that sometimes what I see is people that we try to do things too quickly, and that sometimes, like if we set a goal, or if we came back to the board and said, well, these are some goals that we would like to set, you know, in the next in the next 30, 60, 90, or even for next fiscal year, the immediate kinds of things that I see would be around, the Egan or other opportunities to get involved with, getting people directly into housing over the short term. So
I'm going to put an exclamation point on that. Today is the day on that. You know, I mean, we're right in the middle of it here.
Right, right.
And Commissioner Swanson is asking, what can we do? I mean, you're talking in 30, 60, 90. And there are things that we can do in that time frame. But today, Alicia mentioned yesterday, potentially, the armory of the... this is something that we can actually do for tonight.
I'm asking, what can we do? And you just answered my question. I think that you know, opening up county-owned property was one of the things I thought you were going to say, and I'm just looking at what other resources we may have.
Yeah, and I am involved with
the county-owned property. We looked at that a week ago when this happened, and we don't have a whole bunch that isn't being used. So the Armory's boiler was out, so I'm trying to find out when that's coming back. But you guys kept me in meetings all the time. And then the fairground, fortunately, is being used during these holiday times. So we were looking at, there's a knife show this weekend at the pavilion. And so what can we do? What are our options? And what can we think about around our people that maybe haven't been asked, who are our partners? So we are doing that, Commissioner. And we know that there are immediate needs out there. You know, example would be brought to the board. Small, but that right-of-way around our property that we're looking at, we'll be looking at later to lease to give to the city, so that we aren't, that property can be consistent for the homeless camp. So those are, it's not immediate, but that's something we're going to bring to you, and that's a way we can also be of help. So if you have any ideas or something we're missing, please let us know.
You know what might help me a little bit in trying to think of possibilities is we've been doing this now for three, four years, these warming centers. Mm-hmm. What are some of the things that we find do work well? So if we are putting, if I'm putting my thinking cap on and trying to figure out opportunities, what are some of the things that I should be looking for? Am I looking for something that's huge space?
It doesn't have to be
smaller, a certain location. What kind of things should I be thinking about?
The first criterion, what I've heard, is that it's easy to clean up. And other than the obvious that it has to have bathroom SIP, it has to have relatively easy access, but something that is more in the industrial rather than the residential sort of format. So it is. I heard these words this morning, actually, that if it's an industrial-type setup that has the facilities, that is ideal. Because a lot of the concern people have is return to the sanitary, cleaning the place after a large number of people have been using it for a period of time. So if you're racking your brain for places, the armory is ideal. You know, if it's warm, concrete floors, bathrooms, and it's accessible.
Well, we don't know if it's warm.
It's not a warm building. We used it the first year, and it's not the perfect building. I met with Doug Bales, who coordinates the Higgin Warning Center, when this opportunity came up for this anonymous donor who wants to help out the warning centers around the state. And when we put together the proposal, Doug said that they need funding for storage containers because their mobile units where they do the setup for Egan and all the different churches and synagogues, they need more of those. He said that they need more, this is what we did in the budget, they need more overnight staff for security reasons. And so they asked for funding for that. So that's what we put together, you know, this proposal to this anonymous donor. I think that's the need, and obviously space is the need, so.
So when you say containers, are you just talking about?
They're like $3,000 for a container. Yeah, like a mega.
It's not built into a certain type of features, right? It's just a storage container.
They have a storage container that they currently use, but they need more of that.
Something they can truck to a site.
Right, exactly. And they bring them in like vans and pickup trucks, yeah.
They're important for containers.
Right, they're like a mash unit, but it's around homelessness.
Is it something that they need to short-term use, or is it something that they'd like to have?
I think they'll keep it and then they use it every season.
But they're short on them right now.
They're short on them now. I think he asked for three of them.
You know, Rexius owns this container yard down there along I-5, there at 30th Avenue, and if you're looking at short-term use, I mean, he's got tons of them piled up there, you know. Is it possible to use them for short-term, or see if there's a way to get a donation of them? I'd be willing to call Rexius and find out if you want to.
Great.
So you'll check in, Pearl, and check back?
Yeah, we'll talk with them.
So good. The two most important short-term needs are places to actually open the centers, and then the storage units, it sounds like, and cash for operations to pay staff.
Mm-hmm.
I guess three, that's it. The cash would either be used for containers or staff. So it's cash and places.
He said extra food to supplement what they get from Food for Lake County.
Yeah.
That was another.
But that can be, cash can...
Right, cash can buy the food, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. And actually, a lot of times, Food for Lane County can go and buy on wholesale and get a lot more for a dollar than we'll ever be able to donate as food.
$1.03 meals.
Yeah. So it sounds like, you know, we're exploring everything we can with our building facilities, and we can start talking with some of our partners. I was kind of wondering what E-Web's old operations building's doing down here. that I used to have an office in at one point until they moved us out to Roosevelt. But I know that there's security issues around the E-Web campus that they have to deal with relative to FERC and NERC and all that stuff. That would be an interesting place to talk to a partner about. But, you know, the board has access to a certain small amount of discretionary cash. We usually keep it aside and try not to spend it because it wraps back into our general fund, and we can then spend it on actual budgeted items that we plan for. We do have, you know, $20,000 fiscal year in a reserve. It's actually just supposed to be there for things like, you know, when we fly the chair back to D.C. to lobby for, you know, continuing some programs that support all of our services to begin with. But and each of us has a small office fund that we can also dip into. So would it be useful for the board to, and we can't take a vote in this format, it'd be next week sometime, but I mean, we can. Any of us can take our office funds at any time and contribute them to an agency if we choose to. I try and let mine roll back into the budget every year as much as possible. Also, I try not to touch my office funds. But if this is a critical short-term need and $8,000 would make a big difference, is that what Doug is looking for?
He would be very happy about that. Yeah.
The other thing I want to mention that's not the Egan, but I do know that the last we checked in with the interfaith program, we have 29 families that were waiting to be able to have the opportunity to sleep on church floors. You know, so the other thing would be if somehow we could explore working with them to see, you know, what it would take to get, we're talking about 29 families in all of Lane County who are on this list right now, if we could get those folks housed perhaps, before the Christmas holiday, would be another thing that maybe we could look at. So both working with Egan and working with the interfaith group to see what we could do.
So we're talking about offering rental assistance to those families so they could get into housing?
Yeah, I think that's a possibility. I think that at this point, thinking about it, I don't want to limit it to just that, but if we could.
I wanted to know about maybe on the dire end of things, if you or any of you could estimate if anybody's going to die as a result of all this bad weather, and is there some ratio of homeless population to general population and the temperature, and that allows you to say, you know, that within a reasonable predictability, you know, when temperatures drop this low and you have this many people in one area, that you're going to have a certain number of deaths. Is that a statistic that's available?
I don't know that it's a statistic, but what I would say, and this is something that I think that we have to work with our intergovernmental partners, in the city of Eugene, in particular, on is that we know that when you're in your 50s or your 60s, in your 60s or even 70s, and you've been a chronic alcoholic, inebriant, and you have maybe five or six or more different health conditions, that if you can't make your way back into a shelter, then you're at risk. And I bring this up because I know it's a difficult topic, and folks don't want to enable people who are, you know, in their in their 20s or their 30s, but people who are at that late stage of their alcoholism, their disease, and are at risk health-wise, that's something that, and I don't know, again, I don't know the number, and we're coming up on the anniversary of Mr. Egan's death. And that started the whole movement for the Egan Warming Center. But I think those are the folks that are most at risk because of their ability to get back inside.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to just sort of give it a bigger perspective. There's a event that happens, Michael, you can help me out. I think it's in January, and Dan Bryan does it at the First Christian Church. And it's a memorial remembering people who've died who are homeless in the past year. And everyone, we all gather together, and people name names. And there are a lot of names that come out of that. And whether or not it's related to the weather or just the fact that they've been homeless for a long time, they might have a chronic illness and they're homeless, and they'll die as a result of that. Or, and then also what Steve said, if you're dealing with a substance abuse or mental health issue and you're out there, you're really vulnerable. And the violence that also happens when you're living outside and you don't have safety. When I worked at New Roads for 11 years, we lost two of our kids died. And one was in a violent crime, and one was related to an overdose. So the vulnerability in general is always out there. So climate-wise, people who are homeless are amazing survivors, that they manage to get inside when they can. And I think that our community has responded through the Eden Learning Center and all the facilities that we fund and that you contribute to as Lane County to those services. I think we do a lot of prevention, so there are a lot of people that don't die because of those efforts. And homeless people are survivors, and there are a myriad of reasons why they're dying out there, and it's not just the weather.
Yeah, I was going to say, based upon my experience as a lawyer, that, you know, the holiday period of Thanksgiving through New Year's became for me, in my time as a general practice lawyer, became, you know, a kind of a time where I'm balancing the happiness in my life that I have all this, you know, celebration going on against going into the office every day, and particularly mid-December to mid-January, the level of suicide, the level of death, and this is among a population of say 600 clients at any one day I was carrying, wasn't really representative of the kind of people we've been talking about in this meeting, but just the overall population has a difficult time. If you're lucky like I am to have, you know, a 92-year-old mother and a 2-year-old granddaughter, and the holidays are pretty nice, right. You know, but if you're reflecting on how things aren't very good in your life, then depression begins to set in, and there's just a lot of people that die at this time of year anyway. And so I was just hoping to hear maybe we could open up some of our buildings. I hear in some of the big cities, when there's a big heat wave, you know, they'll open up the hallways in schools, they'll open up hallways in government office buildings, because people just need some shelter from all this. And if they can get into a building like the public service building or like the public works building, and I'm not talking about going into people's offices, I'm talking about the hallways that are typically 20 to 40 degrees warmer than what's outside, you may have that kind of sheltering. It won't be a permanent situation, but it may deal with the extraordinary circumstances that were going on right now. The other thing I was going to ask about is the idea of vouchers, that in some cities, this has been tried, I don't know if it's been tried here, where a consortium of social service agencies will sell to those of us that are not homeless or not in poverty, they'll sell vouchers to us, and basically we can buy these vouchers, and instead of giving people that maybe have alcoholism or drug addiction and give them money, which a lot of middle class people feel that they might use for drugs or alcohol, they can give them these vouchers, and then they can, you know, the people can redeem these vouchers at appropriate, you know, social service agencies that may be able to give them food or give them help. What do you think of that idea? And I know that's longer term. Maybe that's what this board ought to look into.
Are you suggesting vouchers for, like, motels or vouchers for...
I think it's more along the lines of, you know, $1 to $5, and it allows people...
Like a gift card only.
Right. It allows people to, when someone approaches you on the street, which happened to me at approximately 8:15 a.m. today, near the corner of 13th and Willamette, you know, hey, can you give me $1? And if I had given the person a voucher worth $2 that he could use for some social service, maybe food, that might do him more good than...
I think they do something like that in Seattle.
I've heard that that's done in other communities to help people, both the population that wants to help and get more people engaged besides the government, but it's also to help the people that need the help.
Right.
Okay, so I just need a clarification. Commissioner Bosnich, you had asked about cost for a particular item. Would the board be interested in staff putting together, you know, this, a pod or a container would be about $3,000, or that to get two families into shelter or to homes, something like that, so you can do with it what you will. You'd have to make a motion.
Yeah.
Like you said, you can't do it at this meeting.
We'd have to discuss it next week.
Right.
In a board meeting. Where
we could give you some information if you're interested.
And then we have to think about whatever else that,
right, you have
that
to do
contingency
that.
Fund we need to reserve. I mean, we spent it last year to put out a voter's pamphlet.
So I know you're not going to spend the whole time. You've already got some
money. We've already got some of it earmarked for.
I got it.
Back to DC, so we can't.
I just didn't know if you wanted some data, so you could make, if you wanted to put something for the capital for a decision.
Yeah, it'd be nice to have, you know, what something might cost.
Okay.
Yeah,
like a family.
In the interim, any single one of us can make a cash donation.
Exactly.
Yeah. Either personal or choose to redirect some of our office funds. That's up to us.
Well, and I also know that you speak to other people. I just thought if you had some data, it might be helpful for you.
Yeah.
I know you like data.
You know me. I like numbers.
Speaking of numbers, we're getting ready to plan the budget for next year, and I know we're having a meeting to discuss that fairly soon. What is the timeline on that?
I'm sorry, I don't know.
Okay, I don't either. So
I don't know that we have something scheduled.
We don't have anything scheduled in December. Okay. Typically, we would have a December, you know, check-in on the budgets to help guide the preparation of the budget. I hope we get a chance to do that, number one. Number two, do you have any sense of what the HSC budget is going to be? Because a lot of what we're talking about with poverty, homelessness, is a function of the county's contribution to the money that Springfield and Eugene give to the HSC. Is that going to go up? Is that going down? In other words, as part of this longer-term look of what we're going to do about it.
So we have a few things that are still out that need to be answered before we see what the base budget is, so mm-hmm. we can start putting together a budget that you and the budget committee get to look at.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, you know, I could tell you what my hope is, but it would just be my hope.
Mm-hmm.
And without any facts, so I would actually, I'm not comfortable sharing that, but I don't see that we're going to go gut the budget, that we're going to try to maintain the best we can.
Yeah, okay. My sense is if we appoint this board next year, that, you know, appointing the board and cutting their budget will not be sending a moral message that we really want to do something about this, and I would just hope that we tie our budget to the optimism about this new board together, and not just do one and
not the other.
Did the HSC talk about that sometimes?
Yes. I have one thing to close with, which is something that you can do, and it involves it involves funding and budgets, such as we're talking about, it is an effort that's going on, and that I would like to give consideration to take to the legislative committee for discussion and then to the board, but there's an effort going on and the Housing Alliance, statewide Housing Alliance group is involved with it, but in the February session we're trying to get the legislature to consider adding back the general fund dollars that were taken out of the homeless program back in 2007 when the recession hit. The state budget took a big hit, and they reduced the amount of general fund that they were giving us, and what this would do is it would put $4 million back into the two existing programs that the state has, the emergency housing account,
which can be used for homeless prevention, rapid rehousing, and a broad range of services, and then the state homeless assistance program that's specifically for emergency shelter. But this effort is being made for the to see whether or not we can get some discussion of this in the February session of the legislature.
So you can say how much of that $4 million would come out?
Well, yeah, typically we get about 10-12%, so it would be like $450,000-$480,000 that would be restored to the effort in the
question
county.
I have, maybe I'll look at Faye and Pete on this, on work session rules. Can you do head nods?
Well, why don't we just direct this to the legislative
committee? That's what I was going to ask, is if we can get three head nods to say we want to direct this, can we do that during work session?
We need a support letter with facts.
Can we do this during work session? Okay, perfect. So, okay. Three head nods? Direct to the legislative committee?
Steve, you have a draft letter?
Yes.
Okay.
We can get that.
So, direct to the legislative committee?
To the legislative committee.
Okay. Very well. You know, it's nice to keep fact sheets, and so all this information that we can tie in during this period of time, I think, hopefully would help.
$4 million out of $14 million doesn't seem like a big ask.
Yeah.
I'm almost speechless thinking about how little money this is on the state budget.
Yeah.
Our local delegation has heard about it.
Just before we close, just on economic conditions, actually, I've got this at another board I'm part of, but I thought it was interesting. It was Moody's, and as of this August, out of the major cities in Oregon, it shows who are in expansion, recovery, and at risk. And these are major cities, so Eugene is the only one still at risk in recession, so I thought that was interesting. Corvallis is in expansion and everybody else is in recovery.
Well, Benton County traditionally has the lowest unemployment rate out of any county.
I'm a little competitive with Salem and I want to know why we're at risk in there. Point it out that
you don't see necessarily when you hear that we have a 7.3 unemployment rate that was announced recently. You know, that was based on an increase of about 1,200 jobs in the area. What people don't read further down in is that the workforce declined 5,400 year over year, so that we actually had 5,400 people leave the workforce in that time and, you know, become discouraged and not continue to look for jobs and all that stuff. So it's really not so great a news in a lot of ways, and that 5,400 people sitting out there are part of why we're at risk.
And those are all kind of very toxic for us.
Yeah.
All right.
Not to mention those 1,200 new jobs are not always full-time.
You need the big horse in Lane County to help lead the way, and that's the city.
Yeah.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank
great
you.
Discussion.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
So they will respond to our letter. So I'm
convinced.
You are. Well, Tim said on the way to the city.
Yeah, true. Yeah. Okay. Well, Tim, thank you.
Thank you.
Steve.